That's 1-855-573-8227. Thanks for your support. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Is it.
This is all we have.
This is it.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Ha ha ha.
I guess
I'm Barrett.
I guess I'm Lee.
And he's
Groove Out.
Struggling to make it work.
I thought I had it. I thought I had it.
Come on, baby, hold together.
All right, well, Flicted is...
He's a tow truck.
Having engineering problems.
He's having mechanical difficulties.
That might be Pete.
Is that you, Pete?
Is this me?
It is you.
Yay.
I'm Peter Hughes.
How would that be?
Still Peter Hughes.
I'm Peter Hughes.
No, I'm Peter Hughes.
No, I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Spartacus. Wait, Peter Hughes.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We're sad that Flicked is not here, but he is being gallant, not goofus, and helping his lady with her car problems. So he won't be here. Maybe at all. We don't know.
It's like a diehard, and he won't be joining us for the rest of his life.
All right, so you can visit us online at geekradio.com, or you can hang or. It's always and. And you can hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bites, cuckoo.com. Thank you. He's in there
making the noise.
He's got the mic turned off.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on.
He's attacking the darkness.
Let me see that sheet.
Trying to cast magic missile.
It said that I had blue eyes, but I want to have gray eyes.
We amuse ourselves so good. All right, and visit us online, blah, blah. and stuff. Yeah. All right.
All right, we're done.
Wow, somebody's about to go on vacation, it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm all out of those things that begin with the letter F.
Friends?
Hey, family. What are you saying? What are you saying?
Frequently asked questions.
I have no facts left to give.
When do you actually leave?
Saturday.
Yeah.
So tomorrow's my last day of work. So I've already written my out-of-office response and set it for the time that it needs to start telling people that I'm not going to be able to help them.
And is it polite or is it just like...
Oh, it's very polite. I should change it to something that says, I'm on vacation and you're not. But I'm sure that would result in my desk being befouled in some way when I got back. So, no, it's polite, of course. I'm very professional at work, believe it or not.
We had, not to make this into a big story, but we had one time when a manager went on vacation. We had these, this is at a past job, at a certain aerospace company that makes airplanes that begin with the number 7. We had these little offices that had... like full glass, like fronts. It was like there's like a long hallway, and all of our offices were like right next to each other. Office, 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 and everybody. Each office was like a fishbowl.
The secret documents department is the third glass bowl on the right. Yeah.
And so when Alan went on vacation, we took a bunch of packing paper and put it like directly behind the glass, and then filled. There was about a 3-inch space between the glass and the packing paper. Filled it up with. It took 22 cubic feet of styrofoam packing peanuts, and then shut his door and put peanuts under the door. And the visual effect was beautiful. It looked like his entire office. I have pictures actually. Look at his entire.
Show
office.
It to the radio.
Let me show you guys the pictures. It had been filled with peanuts. It was great. It was like a lunchtime prank, and it paid dividends.
You got
for,
the effect.
Forever.
You start to do the cubic meters of what you have to
have. Oh, it's a
huge
amount of packing peanuts.
Yeah, you don't
want
to go that route. Even just doing a car.
No,
insane.
But I mean, just filling the little, you know, 3-inch space between the paper and the glass was 22. I remember 22 cubic feet because we called a bunch of UPS stores. And we were like, how much? Because we did the first.
How many,
we did the
how
math,
many do you have on hand?
Because it was an engineer. You know, it was an engineering company.
How
we were
many
all
actual
engineers.
Peanuts?
We did not count the actual peanuts, but we did do the math and came up with 22 square feet. And all the UPS stores were like, why? You need how much? What are you doing? It's like, well, we just need it, okay? Get into it.
Speaking of office breaks, that reminded me one time Cynthia had a coworker who was irrationally afraid of rats, just terrified of rats. And so Cynthia spent better part of a week surfing the internet for pictures of rats and printing them out and then cutting them out in the shape of the rat.
Well, that's not
and
nice.
Then, and then pasting them all over this poor person's office. So they're on the monitor, they're up on the shelf.
Oh, that's not.
That was terribly, terribly mean. So that was quite.
that's wonderful.
Yeah, and she did the same thing to another coworker who had a thing about spiders.
Don't ever show her your weakness.
Her dedication to the prank is, I mean, you know, it would be like if you guys had taken and made every packing peanut that you used to fill the room.
Into a spider.
How much easier do people breathe when she's out of the office for 2 weeks when they know, like, okay, no Cynthia 2 weeks?
Everything. I'm sure that there's a sense of sadness that, you know, the shenanigans are going to, you know,
stop.
Go down.
And her coworker that's afraid of stuff from Canada is just
about to get
maple leaf.
I brought the pictures.
Oh my god!
This is what it looked like.
That's pure awesomeness.
Yeah.
It basically filled every free space.
Yeah, behind the glass, we had this paper, and we just dumped peanuts into it. It's just, you know.
You should post that on our site, or is that out there somewhere? We should link to that.
I don't know. I put
it
up. I've had it up. For forever. This was back in 2008 when we did this. But yeah, you know, the effect was beautiful.
Email me the pictures. I want to inspire Cynthia. Okay. I'll give her something that she can do.
I'll send them to you.
Awesome. All right. Well, Groovehouse is going to be running the board, so I'm sad to say he won't be available to answer the phones.
Oh, we're not going to be able to take calls tonight?
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
Sorry. Oh, maybe next week.
Maybe.
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. It's not a tuba. All right. Well, we are. It's just so out of whack when people are missing it. I mean, you guys are going to have to experience that for 3 weeks, but I don't care. But right now, it's affecting me because Flickton's not here, and it's just even his quiet, you know, observational
It's the quiet
mode.
Cheshire cat grin that comes from the other side of the plexi.
Just the all-knowing.
The 3 minutes of his talking on the show are just so empty.
I know.
It's 3 minutes we don't have to fill.
There's an awkward silence and a knowing smile that's missing.
Also, no one's calling. Maybe they just want to talk to Afflicted. Like, there's no one on the phones right now.
What don't
There's usually someone trying to...
Stop it!
All right.
You're just going to encourage them.
So, Pete, you have all your own bumpers, right?
I do if we need them, yeah.
All right.
I have the news.
You have the news bumper?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, perfect. So what we're going to do is Groovehouse is going to attempt to segue us into the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, and as a tribute to our missing geek, Afflicted, the first story is actually one that he posted up for us. Although it's on topic, it's not like some kind of it's not non sequitur, as he might. No, the U.S. broadband industry has lost its lawsuit attempting to overturn the Federal Communications Commission's net neutrality rules and the related reclassification of internet service providers as common carriers. The ISP's First Amendment claims, among others, were rejected, quote, because a broadband provider does not and is not understood by users to, quote, speak, unquote, when providing neutral access to internet content as common carriage, the First Amendment poses no bar to open internet rules, the judges wrote in a decision released today by the U- or let's see, it was released yesterday, I think, by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. The net neutrality order passed over a year ago is FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler's signature move during a whirlwind time as the head of the commission. Wheeler said in a statement issued shortly after the ruling, today's ruling is a victory for consumers and innovators who deserve unfettered access to the entire web, and it ensures the internet remains a platform for unparalleled innovation, free expression, and economic growth. After a decade of debate and legal battles, today's ruling affirms the commission's ability to enforce the strongest possible internet protections, both on fixed and mobile networks, that will ensure the internet remains open now and in the future. AT&T promised to appeal, saying, we have always expected this issue to be decided by the Supreme Court, and we look forward to participating in that appeal. Except they said it in a more evil and dark voice. Now, I don't know what kind of voice they said it in. So, in addition to enforcing net neutrality rules against blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization, the decision allows the FCC to continue regulating fixed and mobile broadband providers under the common carrier provisions in Title II of the Communications Act. So that's good. Wow, so it's all safe until it goes to the Supreme Court, right? Today, a Senate committee voted to weaken the U.S. Federal Communication Commission's net neutrality rules. Wow, the lobbyists must have gone into overdrive the second they announced the court decision. Then they must have rushed off to their lackeys in the Senate, who voted Wednesday to approve a bill that would exempt small broadband providers from rules requiring them to provide their customers with information about network performance, network management practices, and other issues. And here's what the rules are intended to do. So let's be real clear. The deal is they want to be exempt because they don't want to tell you, they don't want to give you data about the actual speeds compared to their advertised speeds and potentially controversial congestion management practices at these ISPs. Essentially they're hiding they want the ability to lie to you about the speeds that they're giving you. And, you know, when they've got too much traffic, so if they oversell their bandwidth, they want the right to hide that from you as well. So that when they have congestion, that nobody can look at what their practices are and understand that really the reason that you can't load your websites as quickly as you wanted is because this provider doesn't have enough bandwidth and they oversold it. So they can't deliver you what you asked for. The Senate bill, the Small Business Broadband Deployment Act. Wow. That has nothing other than the word broadband to do with what they say it is, would still ensure, quote, meaningful transparency for consumers, unquote, because of older FCC rules requiring some disclosure of network management practices that would remain in place, said Senator John Thune, a South Dakota Republican and the committee chairman. The vote on the bill, with strong support from majority Republicans, came just a day after the U.S. Appeals Court upheld the FCC's net neutrality rules in full. Congress can change these rules, though. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a similar bill in March in a 411-0 vote. Boy, it's unclear whether the president, a strong supporter of net neutrality rules, would veto the legislation. Joshua Steger, policy counsel of the New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute, said the Senate bill creates a needless loophole. To weaken that order just one day after it was upheld by a federal court is an affront to millions of Americans who asked for these rules. He said in an email, the transparency rules help ensure a level playing field for small businesses to compete in the online marketplace, which is why so many small businesses ask the FCC to create these rules in the first place. The FCC, small ISPs are exempt from the transparency rules until the end of the year, and the FCC can grant an extension. Joshua Steger added that the bill's sponsors haven't explained why congressional action is needed. They also haven't demonstrated how being transparent with customers is a burden for any ISP. He didn't say such a burden. So since the FCC passed the net neutrality rules in February 2015, Republican lawmakers have attempted to pass more than a dozen bills or amendments to weaken or kill the regulations, and none so far has succeeded. The FCC's net neutrality rules basically prohibit broadband providers from selectively blocking or slowing internet traffic. Supporters of the rules worry that broadband providers have large incentives to favor their own services or services from their partners over competitors. Now, remember last week, if you were here or if you were listening, there was the story talking about, you know, bandwidth caps, which kind of dovetails with this. And you might remember that the main point of that story was CEOs from companies that do this kind of internet broadband provision say that their costs have dropped so far that the caps are essentially irrelevant. So notice that the technical objections to this have disappeared because bandwidth doesn't cost the providers that much money. And so it is not a scarce thing. And so they don't need special rules and special treatment to make it work. And they don't need that to make money because their costs have dropped so far. And I don't know if you've looked, but I don't think that you've had a big drop in your ISP in the bill you pay to get internet access. So just, you can check on that one. We'll group government technology fail with, we'll put those stories together and I'll put those at the end. This one is weird, and maybe that marks me as somebody who's old and set in their ways or whatever. But this is really weird that video must be doing well on Facebook, because an executive at the company just predicted that's all that's going to be on Facebook in 5 years. Nicola Mendelson, Facebook's vice president of Europe, Middle East, and African operations, said at a conference Tuesday that in 5 years, Facebook, quote, will probably be all video, according to Quartz. Mendelson added that video is, quote, the best way to tell stories in this world and helps us digest much more information. It sounds far-fetched, but consider the way Facebook is decreasing in emphasis on text and diving headfirst into video with numerous updates and features. There's Facebook Live, which has exploded in popularity since becoming open to the public this year. There's been a bunch of attention-grabbing videos have gone up on Facebook Live, including Mark Zuckerberg's recent conversation with astronauts on the International Space Station, and as GIFs or GIFs, whichever you choose, photos and moving images have become increasingly popular replacements for text reactions, Facebook has responded by allowing users to post videos as comments on the social network. So now it's just going to be video. So now I don't know. I like to read the stuff because then you don't have to see the person or hear them. And the other piece is if I don't know what their comment is, so I have to click and watch them make it to see what it is, that seems like that's wasteful of time. So I guess color me skeptical on it, but maybe that'll be where I'll be the old man yelling about how we used to do it all in print when this becomes a thing in 5 years. But I'll, you know what the best part will be? I'll be telling that on video with everybody else on Facebook. So you can all look forward to that. And now to the darker side of the news, as if all that other stuff was sunshine and light. This one, this is one of those oi stories. You know, Adobe Flash, the gateway to you controlling your computer from outside, apparently. There's a new critical Adobe Flash bug that is under active attack right now, and there is not a patch out yet. Does that make you feel comfy and safe? Attackers are exploiting a critical vulnerability in Adobe's widely used Flash player, and Adobe says it won't have a patch ready until later this week. The active zero-day exploit works against the most recent Flash version and was detected earlier this month by researchers from antivirus provider Kaspersky Labs, according to a blog post published Tuesday by Kostin Raou, director of the company's global research and analysis team. It's being carried out by Scarcruft, the name Kaspersky has given to a relatively new hacking group engaged in advanced persistent threat campaigns that target companies and organizations for high-value information and data. He wrote, Scarcruft is a relatively new APT group. Victims have been observed in several countries, including Russia, Nepal, South Korea, China, India, Kuwait, and Romania. The group has several ongoing operations utilizing multiple exploits, two for Adobe Flash and one for Microsoft Internet Explorer. Currently, the group is engaged in two major operations, Operation Daybreak and Operation Erebus. The first of them, Daybreak, appears to have been launched by Scarcruft in March 2016 and uses a previously unknown Adobe Flash player exploit, focusing on high-profile victims. And then Operation Erebus has an older exploit and leverages watering holes. I don't know what that means. It is also possible that the group deployed another zero-day exploit, which was patched in April. He'll give more details about the attack once Adobe patches the vulnerability, which that's nice, and which should be around the 16th. Isn't that nice? That basically this kind of major piece of software that's running on lots of computers all over the place, that the latest patched version of it is not safe and that there are exploits available out there. You're not totally vulnerable if you have it. There are some, you'll have to research them yourself if you're worried about it. Not using Flash might be another solution, since if they can't keep it safe, then how are you going to be safe? And then now some other hacks. You know, there's a couple other hack stories for tonight. This one is sort of weird and different, and it points towards our kind of Mr. Robot / sci-fi cyberpunk future. On Tuesday, security firm CrowdStrike revealed that not one but two groups of hackers believed to be based in Russia have infiltrated the networks and servers of the Democratic National Committee. According to CrowdStrike and DNC officials who spoke to the Washington Post, fully accessed the campaign organization's emails and chats and stole opposition research on Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump. Isn't that nice? Detailing the attacks, CrowdStrike pointed to two groups of known Russian government-aligned hackers, one dubbed Cozy Bear and another called Fancy Bear. According to CrowdStrike, the two teams seemingly worked independently, either unaware of each other's existence or even vying for dominance within the intelligence apparatus in Russia. Cozy Bear first breached the DNC a year ago, while Fancy Bear struck more recently. The methods that they used. Fancy Bear had created spoofed web login pages for the organizations it targets to steal staffers' credentials and gain a foothold. Then once in, they and Cozy Bear uses spear phishing emails. Once they got in, both groups installed malware on the DNC servers and PCs to continually steal and send information back to command and control servers. The reading about this, the interesting part is CrowdStrike writes that the groups changed their malware on a regular basis and frequently altered their persistence techniques to avoid deletion by antivirus programs or other security methods. So all that, along with the two groups' histories of breaching targets from the White House to the State Department, points to Russian government espionage as the breach's motive. But, you know, going forward, you just kind of, if people can't secure their stuff at this level, how does that change how elections work and how, you know, governments interacting with each other work? They don't talk about that in the article, and, you know, maybe we can talk about that later in the show, but it certainly makes you wonder how that keeps going. The best co-founder of security firm Matasano is a man named Thomas Ptasek, I guess, wrote on Twitter, I like this tweet, he said, quote, "The only thing interesting about the DNC hack is that they got caught this time," unquote. So that makes a good point. Is, of course, the only ones of these that we know about are the ones where people got caught. So we'll keep an eye on it and see if there's any further details. I do know that some of the documents purporting to be the like opposition research have been released. It didn't sound like there was anything really surprising in it. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if all this hackery got them much beyond what you could get by, say, reading newspapers and watching American television. And now to the government incompetence desk. I guess that one was the DNC isn't government, so I guess that one didn't count. This one, the FBI has a facial recognition database, and it got audited by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, and today they announced their results. They said that, first off, it says that the database has 30 million photos in it, and the report says the FBI's use of facial recognition technology is, quote, far greater, unquote, than previously understood. That's according to Senator Al Franken, the Minnesota Democrat who requested the report. The FBI's Next Generation Identification Interstate Photo System, wow, that's a snappy little NGIIPS, which allows law enforcement agencies to search a database of more than 30 million photos of 16.9 million people, raises serious privacy concerns, Franken added in a press release. I'm getting echo, bad echo back. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can definitely hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm hearing what I'm saying coming back at just that right distance.
It sounds okay in our headphones here.
Okay, good. Good. So I'll just sound just sort of spacey and distracted. Let's see. Al Franken, he said that facial recognition technology is a new and powerful tool that holds great promise for law enforcement. But if we don't ensure its accuracy and guard against misuse, I'm concerned about the risk of innocent Americans being inadvertently swept up in criminal investigations. Yeah, you hope that the system can tell the difference between you and somebody else. You wonder who are these 16.9 million people in the 30 million photos that they have? I mean, that's 16.9 million people is a little less than 10% of the population, but still. The FBI, according to the report, the FBI has not assessed how often errors occur. Oops. The agency isn't conducting operational tests of the system, added Diana Marrer, a Homeland Security Director at GAO. While the FBI has tested the system in controlled settings, what we don't know is how accurate it is in real-world use. Isn't that helpful? The FBI says that it searches its photo databases in strict compliance with state and federal law. Concerns about the accuracy of the system are overstated, according to the FBI. NGIPS is not used for a positive identification of a criminal suspect, but instead provides a gallery of likely candidates that are to be used as investigative leads. The FBI has no authority to enforce the accuracy of photos coming from other sources, it added. The photos apparently come from criminal mugshots, driver's license applications, and other sources. As of December 2015, the FBI had agreements with seven states that allowed them to search NGIPS, and it was working with more states to grant access. So hopefully they'll check on the accuracy of their system before they roll it out to even more states. And finally, if you want discount access to government servers, you heard all the hacking stuff and you think that might be great to get your own government server. Researchers have uncovered a thriving marketplace that sells access to more than 70,000 previously compromised servers, in some cases for as little as $6 a piece. As of last month, the Xdedic trading platform cataloged 70,624 servers, many belonging to government agencies or corporations from 173 countries, according to a report published Wednesday by Kaspersky. The number was up from 55,000 servers in March, a sign that the marketplace operators carefully maintain and update the listed inventory. From government networks to corporations, from web servers to databases, Xdedic provides a marketplace for buyers to find anything, said the researchers in a separate post. And the best thing about it is it's cheap. And they mentioned a server located in a European Union country government network can cost as little as $6. The one-time cost gives a malicious buyer access to all the data on the server and the possibility to use this access to launch further attacks. It's a hacker's dream, simplifying access to victims, making it cheaper and faster, and opening up exciting new possibilities for cyber criminals and advanced threat actors. That means other countries and spies. There's now a marketplace for it, too. Isn't that, doesn't that make you feel extra comfortable? Maybe you'll just spend the $6. Maybe people will start just hosting their regular stuff on, maybe they're just, this would be a good place where you could host your website, because then what's the government going to do, arrest themselves? The Kaspersky researchers, the final thing is the vast amount of servers for sale on the Xdedic marketplace offers a very likely alternative for APT actors with low resources, willing to fly under the radar or having difficulties in getting a foothold in any of its victims. $8 USD is a very cheap price to pay for full access to potential high-profile targets. Usually overlooked, I think this is important, servers that have been hacked using brute force methods might present an opportunity for APT actors that doesn't arouse suspicion. They wouldn't know because it got brute forced until they guessed a login and password, and then they owned the server or they pwned it, and then now they can sell you that access. And that's the news.
All right, and it's 8:32:48, so you didn't...
Well, we brought him on a few seconds late, so if he's going to drop, it's going to be...
Oh, you think it's timed on based on when he comes online?
I still think that. I'm not entirely sure, but this at least we can rule it out. If he starts to drop here in a few, we will know that it's after he actually is brought in.
I think you're...
You guys have been dropping out during this conversation, on my side.
Ooh, reverse dropout.
Ooh, we didn't
taste of your own medicine this time, Pete.
Take that.
Do we have the wires plugged in backwards, Groovehouse?
He doesn't have his mic turned on.
There's no wires.
No wires.
No wires. That's maybe the problem. We don't
have
any
button,
wires.
And
how are you doing this without wires? Are you saying wireless?
Magic. Witchcraft.
I don't understand any of this.
It's actually wizardry.
Magic missile. Still casting it.
Roll the dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Oh, yes, you are.
Are there any girls there?
Yes.
So, I wonder if the issue is over or if I'm going to keep cutting it.
Yeah, you still sound fine.
Maybe we're over it, yeah.
Well, whatever it is, it seems to be a very short job. It runs quickly. But...
Whatever it is, yeah, that's when they... to change the load balancer over from the CIA to the NSA.
Apparently, we need to get them to pony up $6 so that they can take over a government server, and we could run that job on that every Wednesday at 8:32.
No kidding.
That'd be a lot cheaper.
It'd be a great way of spending some... No, really not. So, Pete, I noticed you left basically all the Apple news off, but I guess we're going to get to that in... It's been Bite of the Apple, because it was a big Apple week.
This is true. Yeah, I figured putting it in there, it just makes it... well, first off, dividing it up so that we get on to the other side of 8:32 is always a good idea. Cool. And second, just kind of keeping all the Apple stuff together.
Was today the kickoff?
No, WWDC started on Monday.
On Monday.
Yeah.
So the... Was it the watering hole attack that you mentioned, Pete, earlier? I believe so.
Yeah.
So all a watering hole attacks is if you want to get into like a certain company, so it's not like personal targeting. It's like I want inside this company. You figure out like what sites employees of that company would be willing, would be likely to visit. Like if, there is the company, maybe they'll, go look at, I don't know, lime prices or something like that. So what you do is you go infect those sites and you put up sites that they would be likely to visit. You put the malware in there with the hope that they come by, they hit the site, and they go. So it's kind of like what people call drive-by. You're loading malware onto a site, but instead it's very targeted. So they call it watering hole. I guess that's where, everyone kind of congregates from a company at the watering hole, the water cooler. Or maybe it's more of a, Hakuna Matata kind of thing, but it's, something like that. The circle of life.
The circle of infecting people.
Everywhere the light touches, I've hacked it.
Everywhere this hack touches, everywhere this malware touches.
One day all this
you.
Will be yours. What, the curtains? People said I was deaf to put my malware here, but I put it here just the same.
And they uninstalled it.
So I put some more.
And they installed that too.
But the third malware stayed installed.
And now we have huge numbers of servers on marketplaces.
Huge tracts of botnets.
You guys are lame.
Yeah.
And you're laughing at it.
I know.
It's like come to the dark side, but you're already over here.
I know.
Oh,
that would be a good time for Magic Missile.
Well, it said I have blue eyes, but I wanted gray eyes.
Oh, man. I'm just tired. Can we go to bed now?
Sure.
We're going to be on vacation in just a couple days.
I know. I've already checked out.
I know you've checked out, but...
Yeah, but he doesn't do those, like, lay around and have somebody bring you
drinks
by the pool
vacation.
I'm going to
spend more energy on vacation than I do at work.
Yeah, but that's
a schedule
that's whole...
to keep that you care about.
Yeah. My deliveries are all of a sudden relevant and important.
Now, do you know the lay of the Wi-Fi land where you're headed? Are you going to have datas?
Well, here's what's cool. We'll bring the technology talk into this.
Okay.
So
their bits are upside down,
That's no, that's the southern east side of the equator. That's southern hemisphere.
No, it's, in Canada, it's TCP/IPA.
Oh, I see what you did there.
So what's cool is that, and I know that T-Mobile has that free data roaming thing they've got going.
I just found, that's awesome.
It's 2G, right?
Yeah,
or
it's slow.
It's painful.
But it's still there.
Right,
nice.
But it's still there. But when,
oh, I thought, it seemed like the announcement I saw for T-Mobile was there was some accounts that they had, if you did a certain amount, that you get Mexico and Canada 4G LTE.
That may or may not, that might be true, I don't know. But I have Verizon. And what
so it doesn't really matter.
So it's not relevant. No, but I think that the T-Mobile thing is cool, and it's an option because when I travel, when I go out of the country, I like to have data on my phone, and I make the occasional phone call. So what I typically do is when I land, get in country, I buy a SIM card from one of the local providers, and my phone's unlocked, and so usually you could pay anywhere from about $20 to $50. And get a couple of gigs of data, and you're set. It's not bad at all. So I researched on Verizon, though, because I wasn't sure what the roaming fees were in Canada and Mexico. And it turns out that Verizon offers a deal where you turn on a service on your phone. I mean, not on your phone, you're just on your account. You add this service, it costs nothing. Mm. But you could use your phone in Canada on your data plan, on your cell phone contract for $2 a day. So, and if you don't use it, you don't pay.
Mm-hmm.
But if I go on my phone and I want to check my email, it's $2.
Yeah.
So for 3-week vacation, that's going to be a little over $60 to have my phone and with my
your phone, your number, your data,
my
yeah,
data,
that's
all
actually,
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
That was better than AT&T's options the last time I looked. Now, admittedly, to be fair to AT&T, it's been a year or so since I last looked at this, but when I checked last, their options were screw you. Pay us
don't
a tremendous
home.
Amount of money.
Yeah, you could pay like $50 to $100 to get 100 megabytes of data.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. It was
I
like,
think that's still the case.
Yeah, it's like you want to leave the country, leave your credit card with us, and roam forever. It was it was pretty terrible.
But in terms of Wi-Fi, at least in Newfoundland, I'm not sure what the landline internet is like. You know, typically when I travel. Hotel Wi-Fi, just about anywhere you go, sucks. But when you get like into some places, like with New Zealand and Iceland, it felt like I was on satellite connections or
well, you've
really
got one pipe.
DSL.
Yeah, you usually got one pipe that goes back to everything else, at least from New Zealand. You know, you're hooked into Australia, and then you're hooked into you know the rest of the world.
But the mobile coverage, the 3G and 4G coverage of Newfoundland and Nova Scotia looks to be just fine. So
you'll probably be okay.
I'm optimistic.
You might not die.
Well, there are some places in Newfoundland. We're not going to these places where if you want to take this particular drive, you are advised to rent or buy a satellite phone.
Oh, wow.
Because it's so desolate. There's nothing out there. Just no cell coverage, nothing. And if you break down or you have trouble, chances are there won't be a friendly passerby there to come by and pick you up and
friendly walrus or seal come by.
But I'm not going that not going to be quite that desolate where we're going, although it's going to be fairly sparsely populated in some areas. Fortunately,
yeah,
Canadians
a good pro tip on those kinds of trips is don't do anything where you would be required to buy a satellite phone or where you have to watch lots of episodes of Survivor Man to be sure you're up on what you'd have to do.
I don't want to be the living embodiment of Naked and Afraid.
A little chilly. Yeah, that would be a short episode, yeah.
Although it's warming up there. Right now it's getting up around 60-something degrees. So.
Jeez.
During the day, though, at night it still gets kind of chilly, doesn't it?
50s right now. Oh, okay. It's warming up quite a bit, but it's still going to be better than being in Texas.
But the sun stays up crazy late,
I was
going right?
to ask, are you going to be far enough above or near the Arctic Circle where the daytime gets all funky?
It starts to get pretty funky up there. The sun sets around 9 o'clock, and twilight goes until about midnight.
Yeah.
Man, it's not crazy, but it's crazy.
It's not Iceland crazy.
No, it's not like look out at 3 o'clock in the morning and the sun's already up.
No, I couldn't deal with that.
Although it will mess with your head. I have relatives and I've done visited up in northern Minnesota, which is not quite as far north as you're going, but is close enough. And that deal where you go, where the sunset and you sit around talking or doing whatever with a group of people, and then the next time you look, it's 11 o'clock at night. And so, except it just looks like what you would have here at 8:30. And then you go to bed and you wake up with the bright sun shining in your face and it's 5:30 in the morning, which is sunrise often, depending on what time of summer it is.
But it's a
and
big,
that just really your clock gets really messed up.
It's a big boon to drive this kind of road trip tour because, if you're driving and you got normal daylight hours, your schedule's a little tighter. If you feel like you're dilly-dallying too much and you're trying to drive on these rural roads after dark, when the moose come out to hunt and you can't see anything, you can't drive at night in some of these rural destinations.
The moose come out to you. Hunt? what do they hunt, Jay?
Cars. No, apparently one of the greatest road hazards in this part of Canada are moose.
Meese.
Moose on the prowl.
Are they meese? No,
it's
not moose.
Mooses.
But so that means, because my wife and I, we're early risers, so we get up and we eat breakfast as soon as, if they offer breakfast, we get up and have breakfast as soon as we can, and we're in the car and we're on to the next thing. So we're driving 200-300 miles a day. Looks like about 3,000 miles total for this.
Wow.
In 3 weeks.
That's a little ways to go.
Yeah, that's what we did in New Zealand and we did in Iceland. It's just great because it's the whole day. It's just out on the road, pulling over, looking at stuff, driving. But yeah, cell phone coverage.
And the sad part is it's fewer miles than you would have put on if you stayed home and drove back and forth to work.
Fortunately for me, I don't live that far from work, but there are people I know here in Houston that commute some crazy distances. Like, even Flicted, I think, commutes some fairly crazy distances.
I had a professor at U of H that drove in from Austin three times a week.
Really?
Which was, yeah. I think they drove in with someone else that carpooled, but I was like, that's crazy.
Because that's 5-6 hours of driving time a day.
Yeah, they would remind you that if someone didn't make it to class on time, they always said, look, that's how I knew it. Yeah, everyone knew how far their commute was because we had late college students.
Yeah, I was
go imagine that.
Yeah, there are people who commute from San Antonio to Austin daily.
There's people who commute from San Antonio to Houston sometimes.
Not nearly enough, though.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they come over and do a show and then go back the same night.
That's crazy
crazy. Who would do that?
No, it's completely
I may do that next week. I have the potential of a business.
Those are all relatively extreme cases, but even so, people that are driving in from Pearland.
Or the Woodlands, into Houston, that's 45 minutes an hour each way.
At the EMC job I did probably 20,000 miles a year of driving because clients all over town. Start down in League City.
Well, when
and then
driving
you gotta
is your
people.
Job,
well, yeah, that's
I
a
mean,
different.
That's
it wasn't, I mean, you know, the job was to get up there and do PowerPoints and then take people out to get drunk.
Right,
that was the job.
But driving was a
well, I should. Can I count the miles that my packets flow when I secure Shell into servers?
No, that would be
a
gross
miss. Quite the miles.
No.
At 56 cents a mile? Yeah, let's start. Traceroute says these are all going to Atlanta and back.
Tell them. Nobody has yet tried to claim their telepresence as if they took the trip, you know.
That would be
let's see who the creative individual does that. Well, I was in Atlanta for 27 minutes yesterday.
the new guy was confused and thought they said Teletubby presence.
Ew, no.
All right, well, it's...
actually have a Canadian in IRC.
We have a Canadian IRC.
We do.
Canadarc.
And actually, so you're getting a better deal, because apparently they charge about $5 a day for the reverse, one of their main phone vendors.
Well, I haven't heard any positive thing about Rogers, really, ever, the main telco up there. I have never heard anybody say, I've never heard the phrase Rogers is awesome escape anybody's lips. I suppose I've heard it about a person named Rogers.
Roy Rogers is pretty awesome.
But not
careful with context.
The telco that serves our northern neighbors.
He also says you don't want to hit a bull moose on the highway. I would assume really or anywhere. I wouldn't pick a fight with a bull moose.
No, that's like it probably masses more than your car, I would imagine.
Well, since it's not in Try, Buy, or Fry, I'll mention it now. The Volvo showed off their self-driving car in the past couple days. And one of the things that's a difference between theirs and Tesla is theirs does detection for things like moose. It's specifically designed to detect for moose and avoid them.
These things are products of their environment, right? Volvo is a product of
Scandinavia.
And you don't really see many moose in, Mountain View.
Well, a moose bit my sister once.
Or South Africa. Although, I guess they figure that the lions and zebra will run out of the way of your car in South Africa as opposed to... But yeah, when you're up north, I'm sure Jay, when you're up there, you'll get the stories because everybody has them. Once you get up to where there's the big herbivores like the moose and the elk and stuff, then everybody's got the stories of the people who hit one and what kind of insane damage it does to your vehicle.
I've got a friend of mine who I worked with back in the days when I worked at Best Buy. He moved. I guess he's from there. He moved to Halifax a number of years ago, got married. But he tells me, and he says, oh, don't worry, you'll see moose. My brother-in-law lost 3 cars to moose over the last several years.
They were jacking cars?
Man!
Moose jacked.
Boosting cars.
Now, apparently they're they're like the squirrels of Canada. You know, they're just across the road at random. and
yeah, except squirrels don't get enraged, and when they do, there it's not like having a Volkswagen Beetle come after you.
Or even just hitting it's
with
like
horns.
Well, it's like, you know, the body of the moose is up over the hood, so right. That's coming in the windshield if you hit one.
It's coming into the car with you. It's your new friend in the front seat.
Now, if you do a Google image search on moose car crash.
Actually, don't do that Google image search.
It's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so I'm going to be hopefully real careful. But the long days don't bother me. It gives me an opportunity to enjoy the road trip and not worry about getting to the hotel in time.
Do you guys audiobooks or whatever in the car?
No, we just
enjoy each other's presence.
Scenery, too. I mean, that's,
we enjoy each other's company, and we tell jokes. And, you know, like when we were in New Zealand, the thing we were doing was motorcycle spotting. You know, because a lot of motorcycle riders. And what we would do is every time we'd see one, we'd go, Barrett! And it was like there'd be like 8 or 12 of them going by, Barrett. So we abuse ourselves. It gets really, I mean, when you're up running around for days on end and going, you get really stupid. Cynthia and I just have a great time in the car. We don't listen to music and we don't listen to audiobooks.
No technology radio shows, none of that.
We're just cruising around looking at stuff. Oh, pull over here. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't have to shield myself from my life partner yet. Thank God.
And when you get home,
just when you're in the most desolate stretch of road, though, then do the whole "I spy with my." Play that one when there's nothing to spy. And when the choice is the color of the road, the color of the stripe in the road, and the color of the endless tundra that stretches to the horizon.
It'd be really great if you're driving through frozen tundra and everything's covered in snow and it's kind of whiteout conditions. I spy with my little eye something that begins with S.
Moose.
That doesn't start with S. Smoose.
Smoose.
Yeah. Moose. No, you say moose, and they go, that doesn't begin with wham.
No, no, but oh, it does.
Seriously, moose.
Seriously, moose. All right. So, wow. We got about 8 minutes before the top of the hour here on Technology Bites. And. It's a weird, awkward time because I don't know if we have time enough to do a segment before we have to break at the top of the hour. So, Lee, take it away.
I mean,
dude, I'm all set. So if you want to talk about, new Mac file systems, man, I can go like an hour talking about the new APFS file system.
Well, we're gonna talk about the Mac stuff, I guess, in the Bite of the Apple segment.
Oh, that's all I had. I don't have anything else to talk
that's
about.
That's it. Nothing.
I have absolutely, literally, no other things to speak of.
How's your relationship with John McAfee?
Hey, you guys still
Yes.
He's still running?
Yeah, so actually I have an update on that. Let me see if I can find it here.
For those that don't know, John McAfee is the founder of McAfee Software and is quite the...
Has not been affiliated with it for many, many years, as the amazing YouTube video will show you.
And he'll tell you.
Yeah, he will totally tell you. It's probably
any truth to the rumor that he's going to be Trump's running mate so they can condense the libertarian... Republican crazy fringe loony vote all in one place.
Oh my gosh. So he still wants to do the show, and we are likely going to have to push it until after DEF CON because he will obviously be there. It's kind of his thing.
We need to tell him that some people from the show are going to be on the ground
like,
if he wants to meet
him.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be there.
Oh, yeah. We had the opportunity to meet him last year.
Yeah. He'll, you know, go up to him.
He didn't show up to his own party, though, right? Is that how that played out?
Oh, he was there.
Was he there?
Or
maybe I got there too late. I forget.
We got there as we went in, and there was some kind of.
Was this the Palms? No.
No, this was the. It wasn't the Hooters, but it was one of those things. It was the strip club where they are having.
Was it the Hustler Club? Is that
the Hustler
one?
Club? Yeah, the roof. They're having up on the rooftop of the Hustler Club was a party, an invite party with John McAfee, and John McAfee was there. But it was every bit as tawdry and terrible as you might imagine.
Oh, I remember this now. I was kind of glad I didn't go.
We all got out there and we went, ugh, and we left.
It was a Demon Saw party, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I remembered it was at the Hustler Club, because of the stunning inappropriateness of the whole thing. And the
inappropriate,
you know, you kind of go,
in Vegas? That's impossible.
This doesn't sound like an HR-friendly
Hustler
kind of
thing. In Vegas seems like you're putting together two things that shouldn't be combined. It's not, you know, like, the Playboy thing, at least the idea is it's going to be expensive and classier and have girls that you have that just are way out of everybody's league, where the Hustler thing is more like, you know, the entire club is covered with a sort of film and the girls are way under everybody's league.
It wasn't quite that bad, I've got to say, but it was a little fun.
That describes half of Vegas right there. Yeah. I think. I mean, I think Vegas
is kind of covered in a film.
Yeah.
I like Vegas. I like going to Vegas. I do. I have been to Vegas probably at least once a year, every year since 2003, for one conference or another. It's always for work. We did a little weekend thing a couple of years ago, and we're actually going again in August just to hang out. But anyway,
should go early August.
No, it's going to be the end of August because as a very, very brief aside, the rates on hotels on that last week in August are insanely low because nobody is traveling and because school's back in. So we got a great hotel rate. Anyway, I've been at least once a year, every year since 2003, and I like going. I think it's great. Granted, this is my vision of how Vegas is has almost always been seen through the lens of like employer paid travel. So, you know, you just kind of go, you get a nice hotel, you have a bunch of dinners that somebody else pays for.
Hold on, Vegas isn't free.
Wait, I have never really had to pay when I go, and it's always fun.
It can be.
I used to get to travel to New York that way. I can't slam Vegas too much. I mean, New York, it's like even in the nicest parts, it smells like garbage at night.
There's rats
running
the
around.
Wall.
You know, it's just not it's not exactly the cleanest, purest American city either. So there's that.
Yeah. I've only been the once, but Vegas, I like going to Vegas.
I like, you know, I like Vegas when you've got a reason to go other than going to Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, Vegas is just an ultimate destination. I'm just going to Vegas because it's Vegas. Less interesting, but if I can kind of like have a purpose to be there and then kind of peripherally enjoy the tawdry nature, bright light, big city. Of
a restaurant or two. That's always nice, you know, getting food off the
somewhere,
strip.
Somewhere you probably wouldn't have gone if you weren't in Vegas.
Collecting a bunch of pamphlets from people that are just like this.
No.
All right. Groovehouse is saving us from ourselves.
Hey, he found the music.
Hey, he did it. Groovehouse is awesome. All right.
Is this one going to have a rap break in it like the intro did?
Yes, it is. It's going to be Groovehouse doing the rap.
It might.
He's got the... All right. Well, anyway, that music tells us we got to take a short break, which we're going to do now. You are listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
On Saturday, July 30th, the Last Concert Cafe will hold the 29th Annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social, a KPFT benefit. To assist with expenses and to help promote this event, we're looking for those willing to sponsor. Sponsored packages will include admission for two, dinner for two, t-shirts, and a signed poster of the event. Please contact Robin Lewis at 713-526-4000 or email me at deadbeat@kpft.org if you can be one of those who sponsor the 29th Annual Watermelon Dance Summer Social. It won't ruin you. 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
No importa dónde esté localizado en la plataforma política, KPFT está presente a diario en el desarrollo de la democracia. Un aspecto de la democracia es la prensa y los medios de comunicación independiente. Medios de comunicación como este se suponen ser el control y el equilibrio en el gobierno. Y la radio de la comunidad es uno de los pocos medios de comunicación que quedan que es completamente independiente. Es por eso que esta es la época más grande de consolidación de los medios de comunicación que América haya visto. El tener diferentes voces es esencial. KPFT ha estado presente desde 1970 y nosotros hemos sobrevivido a través de las contribuciones de personas como usted. Radio escuchas que donan a KPFT nos apoyan porque ellos saben que eso es lo que mantiene KPFT independiente. ¿Por qué esperar a una campaña de donaciones? Usted puede ser parte de KPFT en línea, dirigiéndose a la página de internet www.kpft.org. Thomas Jefferson dijo: "La gente no puede ser ambas ignorante y libre". Ayude a mantener KPFT energética. Visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para integrarse. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escucha, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
All right, and we're back.
We are.
Barrett time.
That's it for Barrett time. So I gave it to Flicted for safekeeping.
We're an hour into the show, and there's no Flicted. Did he text you? Have there been any updates?
He's on IRC.
Pretty sure he wasn't coming.
He's on IRC.
Told him. Told him I could handle it.
Told him you got it. I have this. Okay.
I got this.
Steven saw. He was chiming in on the Hustler Club thing. There he is.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I have decided that because of the vacation going to Canada and the close proximity getting back to Comic-Con, I'm not going to go to Comic-Con, and I'm all in for DEF CON. Mm-hmm. Comic-Con was going to be a little pricey coming out of this trip, and then DEF CON isn't horribly expensive, but
doesn't have to be.
No,
but it can be, especially trying to, you know, get out of the hotel and go find food.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? You know, you get there for a bare amount of money, but then you got to figure, like, what am I going to do? You know, where can I eat?
Where can I sell blood?
Where can I?
I'm just plasma is where the money is.
Do I need to stay in this hotel with all of these other people who are at DEF CON?
Yes.
Yes, you do. That's part of the experience, apparently.
Although it's too late at this point. So there's still hotel rooms, but not in the main two buildings.
No, I wouldn't go.
Have you checked recently?
Yeah, I went out there. And then I think B-Sides is sold out, too, for the most part, except if you want to sponsor a speaker.
But if you go to DEF CON and you're staying in another hotel and you use an Uber to get over to the DEF CON hotel and you have your phone on when you get out of the Uber to, like, so it automatically...
Everybody gets an Uber.
You get an Uber.
Oprah gets an Uber. That is Oprah. Wait.
All right. Well, this is the second half of Technology Bites coming at you. And I think it's time for another segment. Do we lose Pete? Oh, there he is.
Bite.
And the second.
Wait for it.
You there, Pete?
We actually...
No, it wasn't the... I mute my mic when it goes to the commercials or to the break or whatever you want to... It's not commercials. To the break. To the public service announcement break. And then I forgot to turn it back on when we returned. But the weird thing was I could hear the bumper.
Yeah.
Which usually I can't.
Of course.
Usually it's silent.
Don't know.
So I don't know what...
What are you doing in the booth?
Just something interesting to note.
Did you like it?
Into Apple stuff, which this isn't the week for Apple rumors. This is the week for Apple Trumors. The name of the next...
It is not Mac a Trumor.
OS. Actually, and the other thing is, it apparently is no longer OS 10. The promotional stuff says Mac OS.
Yes,
Mac
that
OS
was formally 10, announced.
10.12. It's called Sierra, so it's the mountain thing. The beta is now available to developers, and I looked at one of the places I found, Gizmodo had their impressions of it. They said that the most noticeable update to Apple's desktop OS is the addition of Siri. Similar to Cortana on Windows 10, Apple's new operating system lets you speak directly to a virtual assistant on your desktop. Aside from the issue of whether or not you actually want to talk to your computer, Apparently, it's really helpful. It's neatly integrated, accurate, and easy to configure. You can put Siri in the dock and in the menu bar, or just keep it hidden behind a keyboard shortcut. Siri's voice recognition was practically flawless, and especially for a beta. They said they tried their usual web searches and questions, Gizmodo did. If you know how to use Siri on iOS, then you'll know right away how to use it on macOS. Problem for me is that means that mine is mostly limited to call and fill in the person's name as far as Siri. Or I guess I have used the what's traffic like, because that does get you quickly to see what's going on. But apparently the best use for Siri on the desktop, according to Gizmodo, is searching for specific files using natural language queries. Think of it as a voice-enabled version of Spotlight. You just click a button on the top right corner of your desktop screen or the Siri logo in your dock, then ask a question or say a command. Things like turn up the volume or increase the brightness of my screen work easily. Apparently if you want something really precise, like locating a file with a weird name, you'll want to fire up Finder or Spotlight and type it in instead. You can get driving directions from maps, compose emails, play specific music tracks and playlists from iTunes, change system settings, and even change your Wi-Fi settings with Siri. The only awkward part of the process is that you need to tap a button to say something, even with follow-up questions. There's no always listening mode on macOS. If you shout, "Hey Siri," your iPhone will spring to life in your pocket, but not your desktop. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't maybe sort of unify that. So when you're near your computer, there's stuff where the interaction between your phone and your computer is a little more streamlined, and they didn't do that. Since macOS Sierra is still in beta, Apple still needs to add Siri integration into most of its macOS apps. Some commands already work, such as pausing and restarting iTunes Music, but third-party application support hasn't started yet, but obviously that'll change. That's part of the point of putting out the beta. Despite all of Siri's uses on macOS, it seems unlikely that people are going to start yelling at their laptops in coffee shops or open plan offices. Unlike Cortana, there's no text box Siri interface, although Spotlight is more or less a version of that. Still, it's worth pointing out that you can't request Siri commands by simply typing them. That's another one that kind of surprises me. Let's see. Another new feature is iCloud automatically downloading and syncing everything on your desktop and documents folder. You're asked during installation if you want to sync both folders, and you can turn it on or off at any time in iCloud settings. If you store a lot of files on your desktop, then it's a really useful addition, but you do have to have the iCloud storage space to match, so you may have to pony up for upgrading that. So this is continuing Apple's process of integrating across their platforms. There's a new optimized storage feature in iCloud where older files are shunted off to the web to make room on the local drive. Apparently Gizmodo's MacBook Pro wasn't full enough to test it out. You can turn the feature on and off. For the most part, it says you're not going to notice you've upgraded from El Capitan. The visuals are almost identical. Options and menus are all in the same places, and the apps are by and large unchanged as well. The cleaner, clearer interface for Apple Music is one welcome improvement, they said, but there aren't many others worth calling out. So there's that. And then, in other stuff, well, this one, I guess, not really a rumor. One of the things, if you've got an older iPad, so macOS is going to update to Sierra. Well, iOS, the tablet, their tablet and phone operating system, is going to update. It's iOS 10, just to keep it confusing. Maybe that's why they went away from OS 10 or OS X. If you've got an older iPad, this may be the one that makes you want a new iPad. During the keynote, Apple announced it would drop support for the iPad 2, the iPad 3, and the first generation iPad Mini. So if you've got one of those, upon iOS 10's release, up to 40% of all iPads could become obsolete, according to mobile engagement firm Localytics. Those numbers may have changed as Apple sells more iPads, but there's still a lot of the older ones. As such, the question is whether iOS 10 will cause customers to upgrade their older iPads or lead to the iPad market's decline in the tablet ecosystem. I don't know. If replacing an iPad 2, those are getting pretty long in the tooth. They're getting pretty old. I've got one that I bought, you know, new way back when, and it's still useful, but it's certainly not the cutting edge. I also have an iPad Mini 2, which, you know, works fine and won't become obsolete. But I must admit, I've been thinking about getting a newer iPad Air or even maybe the big iPad Pro, just because they do seem to be useful on a portable basis.
Is it my imagination, or are the iPads going up in price with the new versions? They seem to be more expensive.
I think there's been some creeping up, and they raised the prices a couple times. When they came out with new ones, the newer ones are more expensive. There's also the Pro stuff, which is really higher priced. If you're seeing those, that's when you start getting up closer to $1,000 or over, depending on the size. Although the other thing is, I've seen a lot of merchants are pushing the bigger capacities, which obviously are more expensive. But if you look, because I keep an eye out on it, there's a fair number of bargains on like iPad Air 2s and stuff, even sort of new in box. If you look around at the sites that like highlight deals and stuff, they still have pretty good prices. I mean, the iPad Mini 2 I got was through a site that sells them on eBay, and it's a 64 gig, and that was when they went to the universal, where you could just put a SIM card in from anybody and use it. So it's got the cellular stuff to it. And I paid $300 basically.
Yeah.
And it was brand new in box. So that you know, if you look, and that this was more than a year ago. It was a couple years ago, I think, or 18 months ago. So you can find deals if you look. But
Cynthia still has an iPad 2, and like you said, it's getting long in the tooth. But she's reluctant to upgrade hardware. So my inclination is to buy whatever the best one is now, with the idea that it's going to have to last for another 5 or 6 years or more before she's willing to consider an upgrade. So I don't want to buy anything, you know, that's outdated. Plus I want to just get something with lots of storage. And it just seemed to me that, you know, the top of the line iPad, when the iPad 2 and the iPad 1 came out, was not in the price range that these things seem to be in. And maybe I'm just misremembering that completely. I didn't hear the first part of what you're talking about, on the bite of the apple. On the release dates on these things, have they announced that on the new operating systems and the new devices?
I think the usual is in the fall. And so like the iPad, the iOS 10 thing will come out probably it'll be whenever Apple has it's likely to be right around whenever they announce the next, you know, next refresh on iPads, which usually is in like September or October, if I remember correctly. So you got a little bit of time, but, you know, there's a couple tricks that you can do to afford one. I mean, if you're wanting one that has the cellular, Verizon, I guess, doesn't do it, but like T-Mobile, if you're a T-Mobile customer, they have the thing where if you get the cellular enabled one, you get 2 years at 0% interest to pay it off, which makes it pretty easy. They just divide up the payments across your bill. The other trick that you can do is if you have a PayPal account that you've had for a while, the PayPal credit thing works, and you have that's less time. I think you have 6 months to pay off.
Stretching the payments doesn't do anything for me. If I can afford it now, or if I can afford it in 6 months, I can afford it now. I'd just rather be out the money. It's not that I can't afford it. I mean, obviously doing payments can make it go down a little easier.
Yeah, put it on the card. Get the points, get the miles. Put it on the card always.
Yeah.
Well, also I figured, you know, it's like if it doesn't help you, there's plenty of people listening who might.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
How to handle it. So there's that, you know, so it's coming, you know. Obviously the nice part is, you know, we're talking about, you know, and the reason that maybe, you know, those listening, you know, there's not a lot of rending of garments and wailing and gnashing of teeth. with these particular ones going obsolete because they are pretty old. So it's not like, you know, it's not like the one that somebody bought, you know, 3 years ago is now suddenly going to turn, is going to be obsolete because of the operating system. It's the, I'm sure a lot of iPad 2s in that have reached sort of towards the end of their life cycle and are in the hands of second or third users down the food chain, like kids and stuff like that for a lot of people.
The base level Wi-Fi and cellular 32 gig iPad Pro is $729.
You said that is with cell or without
That's
cellular?
That's with cellular.
Okay, yeah.
It's $600 without cellular, but $730 with cellular. But I don't remember the 32 gig iPad 2 being more than what $400 or $500.
No, it was $700
because
I got one when they were new. The cellular, the iPad 2 with cellular, was like $700 and something for the 32 gig. It was like $600 for the 16 gig, I think.
Yeah, I'd have to look. My wife's got an iPad 2. It's basically a movie watching machine at this point. It plays videos and not much else. But I want to say, you know, it's a 16 gig version with cell. And I want to say, yeah, it was like close to $700 when we got it, however many years ago it's been.
And the Pro, the iPad Pro is the premium one. That's going to be a higher, I believe, because there's a distinction between that and the now I'm questioning myself.
The Pro's
There's the iPad 3 or whatever, and then the iPad Pro, and then there's the iPad Pro, the one that's the ginormous, you know, the 13-inch screen one.
Well, there's the iPad Mini 4, the iPad Air 2, and the iPad Mini 2, and the iPad Pro.
iPad Pro has two sizes, right? The iPad Pro has two sizes.
This is starting to sound like the old Centris line, how there was 900 million different kinds of Mac Centrises, and you never really knew which one was which.
Well, it's like, how many versions of Windows 7 can you get?
Yeah, right.
I still like cool.
The thing I wonder, you know, if the time comes when I get another one, I'm trying to decide whether I would go with the, like, big honking 13-inch iPad Pro or not.
You know, they're nice.
I used one and it was not clunky or heavy. So that was the thing that was sort of striking to me when I did use one.
That's nice. It's just super expensive.
That's true. Big battery life though, and long time. It'll work for a long time without being obsolete. The idea would be to have it as a laptop, you know, basically as a portable device replacement. Of course, you know, then you look at the other side and you could get like an iPad Air 3 and a Chromebook.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say, man.
Stuff.
Yeah. For that much, for the amount of money you'd spend on the big iPad Pro, if you get the upgrade from the base model, I don't know what the base versus the advanced storage model is or whatever, but I mean, you're spending $1,200 or whatever. It's basically the price of a new laptop.
True. Yeah, well, and you can get it. Yeah, it's cheap. That's more than a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And right up in the range of a MacBook. You've got to wonder when that's going to start changing with Apple. Because at some point, the pressure is going to come on. And it may be that part of it will be when people have to replace their there may be a lot of people who go Android when they have to replace their older iPad devices because they've gone obsolete. And then this one, written by some kind of high up guy at Ars Technica, you know, some dude with the title, talking about the new file system spotted in macOS Sierra. I already had looked at the article and then I saw the byline and it's like, oh yeah, well this is definitely what we want to talk about.
That was
he's stealing your thunder.
It was actually one of two things. Like after that came out, they published the dev documentation, so I had to go back and read all the dev docs, and then I wrote a second piece that got into some of the functionality.
So tell us about it.
Well, so that's kind of the thing. macOS Sierra it's not going to come out of the box with it. It'll come with it, but it won't be default. But it's going to have a new file system, and it's a big deal if you're a technical Mac user, because Macs have had the same, with some software additions to it, basically the same file system for years and years and years, HFS Plus. It's gotten some cool add-ons like core storage, and it can do, you know, some cool stuff, but it's not a next-generation file system. It lacks a lot of features that other next-gen file systems do. I mean, some of this is, you know, under-the-hood shop talk, and for average folks, you don't necessarily care, but there's going to be some really cool benefits. So the new file system is called Apple File System, not super creative with the name, and you'll see it referred to as APFS, because AFS was already taken as an acronym for some other, like, Apple file system from their weird Unix days, I think. It's got a whole bunch of cool under-the-hood features, but the two biggest things that I'm excited about are that it finally adds, like, checkpoints, read-only checkpoints, and instant volume, or an instant cloning, and cloning of, like, you know, file objects or folder objects. And the way they demonstrated this in the WWDC session is they had a dev up on the stage with two flash drives. One was formatted with APFS, and one was a regular HFS Plus flash drive, and he stuck them both into this Mac on stage. And the flash drives were, they were each 4 gig drives, and they each had like some pictures on it and like a copy of iTunes on it, and you looked at the free space on each. And then on one flash drive, the old one, the guy lassoed everything on the drive and Command C, Command V to make a quick copy of it, and it started copying. And then while that one was copying, he went over to the new one, the APFS drive, and lassoed everything and dragged a copy of it onto the flash drive to dupe it, and it instantly cloned. And it, instead of taking up, you know, however many more gigs of space, because it uses block-level cloning with pointers, it just creates a new sort of set of pointers to the objects rather than having to suck up additional disk space when it copies. And then when you make changes to stuff, if you've got a clone of something, it keeps the changes kind of in a bitmap, and then keeps the delta of those changes as the amount of used space. So, I mean, it's neat stuff. It's really, really, it's the kind of stuff that you see in the enterprise, and it's sort of analogous to Windows shadow copies, but rather than having to go through this funky dialog box to get to them, it's implemented in a transparent and seamless way. So I don't know. I'm really excited. It's the kind of thing that gets me, you know, super jazzed. Is these kinds of, you know.
Well, I think regular people, the key things that might excite them is one, it's optimized for, you know, flash and solid state storage, which that's clearly the future right now. And so having it work better and faster, that's never a bad thing. And then also, it sounds like encryption is a lot mm-hmm. more of a core thing for it. So it, presumably, if you're concerned about security, it's a lot more built with that in mind, at least from what I got from.
Yeah, no, they do the, so with the flash optimization, they're doing a thing called write coalescing, which again is something you don't usually see in consumer type hardware, where if you've got a bunch of different little writes that you're going to make to the file system, rather than doing them piecemeal, the operating system will sort of bring them all together in a chunk, which makes more efficient use of the way that flash drives do pages. And then the encryption's kind of a cool thing, too. They're going to do, they'll have, like, you know, you can have three encryption options, they said. You can have no encryption, this one's easy, there's no encryption. You can have single key encryption, which is analogous to whole disk encryption today. It works somewhat effectively like how File Vault works today. And then you can have down to per file encryption, which is super useful if you've got more than one person who logs into your computer and uses it. And they even can have, and this gets a little technical, they can even have per extent encryption. So if you have, like different versions of a file, you can have different encryption keys applied to different versions of the file. And again, this is all super cool stuff. Features that most people are going to care about, the encryption is a big deal, the speed is a big deal, the fact that the cloning is transparent is a big deal. It's just a big deal. But kind of like I said in the beginning, you're not going to see the new file system by default when the OS launches. I think Sierra is supposed to come out, what do they say, in the fall? Is that when they were saying, Pete?
Yeah, that's their usual cycle. Yeah. October.
The beta versions will have it as an optional component, and they're saying it'll be released in 2017. So More information is going to come out soon. Right now, you know, WWDC is still going on. The Apple Worldwide Developer Conference is still happening. People are still learning about this for the first time. But over the next few months, as beta access expands and people get their hands on it, this is going to be, you know, a cool thing. And it's going to be neat to see what people do with it and how this kind of thing empowers people. You know what? It's really going to change is Time Machine. The way that Time Machine works now is actually a little, I mean, everybody should use it. It's a great thing if you have a Mac, you should use Time Machine, but it's a little hacky in how it works now. And one of the big problems with Time Machine is that it backs up per file. So if you have a humongous, gigantic file and you change one little byte on it, Time Machine will back up that whole file again. And if you change one little thing in it, it'll back up the whole file again after that. The new changes to how this whole cloning snapshot thing means that the new version of Time Machine, if they integrate it with this, will no longer work that way. It'll only back up the teeny little changed bits, which could be a very big deal for your, you know, save you huge amounts of backup space.
That is interesting. So is this like the file system different in the way that NTFS is different from FAT32?
Or
is it an enhancement of the, I mean.
It's a ground up rewrite. It is not a bolt on of HFS Plus or whatever. It's most analogous to something like ZFS or BetterFS. But I mean, in terms of like what you would notice and how it's going to like change your life, the difference between FAT32 and NTFS, that jump on the Windows side is probably a good analogy. Yeah.
But it also created some issues with reading files between systems.
Well, so one of the things they have said in the dev presentation is that it'll be fully backward compatible. So you shouldn't, you know, I don't know, I'm not a developer.
No, I mean, NTFS can read FAT32, but FAT32 can't deal with NTFS.
No, they've explicitly said if you have a Mac that is at Yosemite or older, so basically anything that's not El Cap, you won't be able to read any like disks formatted with this or anything. So the cutoff apparently is going to be El Cap. So anything older than that will not be able, and they're not going to, I don't think, unless somebody releases like a third party, you know, utility that enables it, you won't be using this on older Macs. This is a new Mac only thing.
Well, does it have any ability to deal with NTFS file systems?
I don't think so. I mean, traditionally they've never done, because I think Microsoft charges licensing fees if you want to read NTFS. I know you can.
You can read NTFS, but you can't write NTFS.
But you can if you go buy a third-party utility. I don't know what they're going to do with NTFS. I don't think they're going to do any additional changes with how they deal with NTFS. They don't have to, you know, frankly. It's not something they have to deal with. What they are doing on the networking side, we don't have to go too deep into this, but they're dropping, they're doing everything they can to deprecate AFP, the Apple Filing Protocol. They've issued some things saying that with this new file system, you can no longer use AFP to address network shares that are shared out with it. It's SMB SIFS only. I guess it's SMB, it's not SIFS. SIFS is the proprietary one. But it's you can't use AFP anymore to access file systems that are shared, that are new APFS file systems that are shared. This is kind of a sad thing, right? AFP is kind of like one of the last big holdouts from, like, you know, the old school Mac era. And in some cases, it makes for better Mac file sharing. Currently, you can only do Time Machine over AFP. I don't think you can do Time Machine on the network over SMB because it needs resource forks or whatever the extra Mac stuff is. Anyway, this is all good change, I think. This is all part of sort of dragging some of the worst legacy parts of Mac OS out of the darkness. Hopefully, this will eliminate some of the anybody who has a Mac and local network shares has run into the dreaded eternal hang forever if you lose connection to your network shares on your Mac, and hopefully this is a huge step toward making that problem go away forever, please.
Yeah, hearing this, I have a client that is very reliant on AFP, so I'm going to have to be ready for that.
Till 2017.
Change.
That's the formal release. Plus, they'd have to upgrade all their systems first, and clients never want to do that.
So I guess, you know, moving on from there, there's an interesting article, and all the articles that we talk about on the show tonight are at geekradio.com. You can find links to the kind of source material, you know, so if you want to follow up farther, because certainly we don't talk about everything that's in them. But there was one from Fast Company that's talking about how Apple is building an Uber platform out of all of its platforms, that the kind of integration across, they're doing it differently. You know, this is from Fast Company. It says Apple CEO Tim Cook opened up the company's WWDC week by noting that his keynote would focus on the company's four device platforms, Apple Watch, Mac, iPhone, iPad, and TV. Microsoft is, you know, basically kind of is moving everything together towards one single approach, you know, with the same version of Windows on the desktop and phone. And Google has allowed Android apps to invade Chrome OS, but Apple keeps their stuff separate. You know, touchscreens, there's not a Mac with the touchscreen or iOS apps that run on the Mac. But while they haven't done the mono platform, they are building on connecting all of the, connecting them all together. Apparently there's an update to Continuity, which is the loosely defined Mac iPhone pairing initiative that has the tricks like automatic hotspot tethering and allowing documents created on one platform to seamlessly transfer to another. With upcoming versions of Mac OS and iOS, Apple extended to the most basic exercise of being able to copy something on your Mac or iPhone and paste it on the other device. That's kind of nifty. It'll also bring iOS's automatic app downloading to tvOS. So if you get an app for the iPad, it'll show up on your Apple TV if you have it. And then there's the whole, we've talked about, the whole plug-in to Siri where they're going to have the API. They're talking about that. They says Siri was not the only example of the company integrating intelligent services into its Uber platform. Because, of course, the Siri stuff goes across, the Mac, basically the Mac, the iPad, tvOS, and, you know, there's also CarPlay, where this might have some value. The next version of macOS will have the option of automatically moving older files to iCloud, like we mentioned earlier. And a lot of the stuff, and it's one of the things from when Lee was talking about the file system, there's a lot of this stuff is not flashy, sexy, where you just, it's going to totally rock your world, but the cumulative effect of a lot of it is that there's a lot of friction is going to be taken out of your interaction across your devices, through the, at least if you're all Apple. So, and that's all the Apple news for this. I'm sure that this means that in the next week or two, we start coming in that, we'll hit the summer doldrums in July, and then we'll hit where the phone and iPad rumors will start going bonkers. So there's that. So you have that to look forward to if you're really up on or really wanting to be up on the Apple rumors going from there. So the plus side on Jay's thing on getting a new iPad, one of the things is this fall when it comes time when the next iPad comes out, if they do any kind of upgrades and offer anything new, then the last best one from before it is going to be a lot cheaper. So like if you don't buy the absolute latest and greatest, you can save a ton of money on buying the just recently was so cool and now oh no it's so old. So there's an option for you.
Yeah, I really wish they would just simplify down their line, though. I was looking at the Apple Store page. We were talking about the different iPad lines, and yeah, there's too many, man.
I really miss the days
when Apple had a simplified product line.
Yeah.
It almost seems like they should go to the Air ones. There's the Giant Pro. And go by screen size. So have the Pro be the big one and maybe have it be the smaller, you know, the 10-inch one, and then have the Mini, and then that's it. And then there's the different specs on the sizes as opposed to the names get clunkier and clunkier, you know, the iPad Mini 3 and like that.
The whole thing is just an escalator to spending more money because you look at the entry level and you kind of go,
a
little bit more, I could get this. Oh, I'm already in for that. Why don't I go ahead and get this? Right. Well, just stepladders you up to the higher the highest priced item.
And they make it all obsolete 2 months later.
Exactly. Like. Yeah.
Yeah, you
can. Yeah, they seem to be in – all of their lines seem to be in flux. I mean, if you look at the computers, there's not a real sensible kind of good, better, best sequence to it. You know, there's sort of the – there's all the trade-offs between the MacBook and the MacBook Air and then the Pros, you know, the 13-inch Pro and the 15. And so it's not – it doesn't have a smooth kind of you know, progression like some of this other stuff. And then the iPads are all over the place. I don't know if that, you know, it'll be interesting to watch and see if that changes, if that gets more rational as they go, because it seems like, it seems very not Steve Jobs.
No,
I think
not.
This would be one of those things that he would be like smacking somebody upside the head and saying, three choices, you know, good, better, best.
Well, you know, there's that apocryphal story of, like, one of the first, like, changes he made when he came back in 97 or 90, I guess it was 97, was he went into, this is, you know, so the story goes, went into the conference room and said to the engineering group and the marketing group, I want one of everything that we make, you know, bring it out here and put it on the table. Let me see, I want to visually look at, you know, everything we're making. And, you know, it's like the 500-course meal being marched into the banquet hall, and there was, you know, one of everything that Apple made in 1997, which was, you know, every Quadra, every Centris, every Performa, like, and all of the weird stuff, like the Apple microwave or whatever they were making at the time, and there was just so much stuff. And Jobs was like, we're gonna get rid of 99% of this. We're gonna make this iMac desktop that I'm gonna come up with, and we're gonna make this, you know, PowerBook laptop, and like, we're gonna make those two things. And then, you know, they did, and they made a bajillion amount of dollars. And I don't know, when you look at their product line spread, it looks sort of like an hourglass shape. Back from the old days, it's big, wide, and fat, and there's tons of everything. And then the second Jobs era, the product focus narrows, and now it's widening out again.
But there's no Jobs to come back and narrow it back.
I'm looking at the iMacs right now on the Apple Store, and the entry level iMac doesn't come with an SSD. It doesn't even come with a Fusion drive. And so right off the bat, you're like, well, I don't want to buy that. I need something else. So that, you know, choice price on that entry level thing is like, well, this doesn't do anybody any good. You've got to get the step up for you to have, you know, basic performance, and it just goes from there.
Oh, but then another $50. Yeah, and then next thing you know, you're looking at seven. You can ride that wave up from about, you could start looking at a, like, refurbed 11-inch MacBook Air, MacBook Air, and get yourself up to about $8,000 worth of Mac Pro with multi-screens and way overpriced, hideously overpriced hardware, frankly, for the Pro.
Mm-hmm.
When you get the desktop, desktop trash can thing, when you start really loading it up, that's another one that's sort of a puzzle. But I guess we can save that for another week. We can talk about Apple, what the heck, kind of thing. It can be the sort of Seinfeld episode of technology sites.
Apple,
what's the deal with that? So I'm thinking we should probably seg into another seg, huh?
Another seg.
Do the segue.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
Actually, I like that I can hear the bumpers. It really helps feel part of the show more instead of sitting in silence and listening to you guys sort of shuffle in the studio. This one, there's a bunch of kind of interesting stuff for Try By Fry tonight. I don't know if any of you have looked at or seen the modular phone thing has sort of hit a big trend where lots of people are interested in it, or at least are talking about it. And the Motorola Moto Z has an interesting take on the modular thing. This is from Uncrate. They say modular phones are a great idea in theory. In practice, they tend to look like a Lego kit on the back of your phone, only worse. The Motorola Moto Z has a smart solution. It's compatible with Moto Mods, a series of accessories that snap onto the back of the phone with magnets. adding features like better speakers, a bigger battery, or even a projector without having to add, you know, the you know, there's no ports and plugs to make it work. Apparently, it has all the specs that you would expect, like a 5.5-inch quad HD screen, fingerprint reader, 13-megapixel rear camera, speedy charging, and a water-repellent coating to help survive splashes and spills. So now they just need the mod. Why, I wonder why they can't do the modular where that it's like the screen, so that then, you know, when you screw up the screen, you just unmagnet it and get another one and click, put that on and have it. I know that would probably crazy complicate. But it does seem like as phones have gotten so much thinner where you can't really, they're not modifiable by regular humans, that having these kind of add-ons is kind of cool. And having it with a magnet instead of a case, instead of having to buy like various cases, does seem like it'd be a cleaner solution. So I don't know if we'll see more of that from other companies, or if Motorola will just kind of twist in the wind with this one. They also have not announced the pricing, so it's not clear what it's going to cost yet. This one, I'm interested to hear what the panel thinks. You know, it's been E3 is going too at the same time as WWDC, and apparently one of the bigger things that's been talked about is the next Legend of Zelda game has been announced, which it's been quite a long time since there was really a new Legend of Zelda. It's subtitled Breath of the Wild. I don't know what this whole thing is that in. You can see the series hero Link climbing, chopping down trees, and even cooking in this one. I don't think they've done the big Legend of Zelda cooking mama mashup that we've all been waiting for, but it's going to come out to the Wii U and also to the as yet to be revealed NX platform, which is launching next March. So
that's a specific to one console, right?
Nintendo.
Yeah,
Nintendo.
It's an open world. You know, Legend of Zelda, though, that's one of those where it's kind of, it's hard to scratch a gamer who's serious about gaming much, who does not have lots of experience and opinions about Legend of Zelda games. That seems to be the gateway drug to the really serious gamer types, as far as my experience has been. But this is them moving into the open world approach. Apparently, it's the biggest Zelda game ever, as far as the scope and size of what you can see. So they're coming out with a new platform right when it seems like the platform world is really is changing a lot. So maybe
changing beyond what, like with the Xbox and the PS4,
it's getting to be more like the phone market with apps and smaller stuff, and then the, you know, it sounds like the kind of blockbuster model is starting to get starting to show some signs of weakness, and you know, people are more inclined to get an app for their apps for their phones and do some of that. So I haven't looked at as much as what the NX is going to do, but you notice there's the real push on I've got a PS4 and I can see it, and I think there's a big push for it on the Windows side or on the Xbox side, is all the kind of network and the, you know, buy the subscription to connect up across the network. And then the next piece is just not buying the discs and downloading games. And I also wonder if they're kind of not, if the console world, the development cycles have gotten so long that it gets, that I think that's getting problematic. I think they need to find some things to put in the middle that they can release more quickly that are cheaper or whatever, that'll tide people over. Because there seem to be large gaps where, you know, there's not anything big or new that's come out that to keep people busy. And then, speaking of the Xbox One, just what you always wanted, a mouse and keyboard support on your Xbox One. So now it can be virtually no different than your PC. I get the other side of it, which is obviously there's a lot of people who really like the control You know, especially PC gamers like the control and that and speed that they can get from a keyboard and a mouse. Apparently, that is going to you know, keyboard and mouse support is going to show up on the Xbox One in a matter of months. Microsoft's Phil Spencer said in an interview with PC Games, truthfully, in our dev kit modes, now keyboard works, mouse support's a little bit further away. He says, I say it because I know it's not years away. It's more like months away, but we don't have an exact date yet. So, you know, this ties in with the whole Play Anywhere initiative where the software kind of crosses over on the Xbox One and the computers.
That might be an opportunity for me to determine if, gaming on a PC is better than, you know, the console. If you could.
Yes.
Personally determine that.
Fine. The thing to me, PC gaming is interesting.
Lee does it with his virtual reality with a virtual keyboard. You know,
it's all Lawnmower Man to me.
Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, he likes to use virtual reality to. He even his whole setup is inside virtual reality, so he doesn't even actually play on his PC. Right. He puts on the helmet.
My office is just VR has cube. The.
His office is actually a very bare cell, and the fancy office is in VR. Anyways, now, and then a couple interesting ones. I've been, you know, I like earbuds. I like Bluetooth earbuds, but, you know, the funny part is, you know, at first you had the ear, you know, Bluetooth was just the single earpiece, and you couldn't really listen to music through it except through one ear, and then the stereo stuff is like headsets and large things that, you know, or Bluetooth setups that have almost as much wire as wired headphones. Well, now we've gotten to where they have the earbuds, and literally that's all there is the buds. There's a few companies that have them out, but Mashable has a review on some called the Apollo 7 earbuds. And it says that they look like that when you have them in, it looks like you've got bullets in your ears. But it's just it comes in a case that charges them up and holds them. Since obviously this is like the premier losable technology, that is not cheap but easy to lose. The Apollo 7 ones are more focused on music, it sounds like. They're lightweight, water and sweat resistant. They're large for earbuds, but small considering everything they have inside. They come with different ear tips to help hold them in your ears if you need them. The thing with it, since there's no wire connecting the left ear and the right ear, apparently you have to put one earbud in your ear and you hold down the power button and you keep holding it until it pairs with the other earbud first. And then you sync the whole paired setup with your Bluetooth device, you know, with your device, your phone or whatever. And then you can connect up. But once it starts working, then you just have to power them up and use them. The other interesting thing with this from the review that I saw is that the only thing you can't really do with them is you can't really watch movies because there's a noticeable lag in time between what you see on the screen and what you hear in the headset. I don't know what the reason is behind that, but apparently you would not want to be watching movies on a flight or whatever with these in your ears. So, it comes with the other part that's sort of funny is to get the little tiny earbuds, you have to carry a thing that's close to the size of a deck of cards that holds them and I think charges them as well. The other thing on these is apparently it takes about 2.5 hours to charge them up. So that's a little bit long for, they've got about 3 hours of life and it takes a couple, 2.5 hours to charge them. You know, if you don't want any wires whatsoever with your earbud experience, then you may want to check out the Apollo 7s.
I don't want any buds with my earbud experience. Just not a I like
you need more buds.
I need more bud, man. I guess if you have these, you're Budweiser.
Oh, and now one that, you know, it's surprising, I guess, partly because, you know, I mean, our iPhones and Android devices are pretty futuristic anyway. I mean, it's real Star Trek pad device stuff. But there's often, you know, even like the Tesla self-driving car doesn't get that like Jetsons futuristic thing going. But this one I found is pretty, I think is really kind of awesome. It's a table. It's a fancy dining table, but it's like crazy geeky high tech. It has heating and cooling elements built into the surface of the table, but it's not like it's the table top itself is very thin. It's like 6 millimeters thick. So it's not, you know, some big clunky, you know, because everybody's seen the like the old 1960s, you know, home of the future where you could cook right on the table. And yeah, the way they did that is they like the table is 8 inches thick and they built a cooktop literally into the top of the thing, as opposed to this uses the induction heating. So there, the surface of the table doesn't get hot. Only the pan or plate or whatever that you put on it gets heated. It uses, it has a cooking area that actually gets really hot that you can cook food on. And then it has warming areas where you would have your plates. So it keeps your food warm. And then near that, it's also got zones where drinks are kept cold with thermoelectric cooling provided by concealed Peltier elements. So it's simple and it's safe, you know, because that's the other thing, you know, your high tech table of the future that you could cook on, you have that risk where if you're standing by the table and you put your hand on top of it, that you would be seriously burned. And this one does not do that. The designer says, designer's name is Clemens Weissar. He says it's really simple and it keeps the food hot. You need 42.5 degrees Celsius, not more, not less. You can put your hand on it and it won't burn you. With the cooling, you need -5 degrees Celsius to keep a glass of water or a bottle of sparkling wine cool. It's quite simple. And it does, and it looks, it doesn't look Jetson-y in the like schlocky, you know, it looks swoopy futuristic. It looks cool, aerodynamic, futuristic tech. It would certainly be on my like win the lottery dining table that I would have at some point if they ever put it out as something that everybody can buy.
Has it got buttons to trigger trap doors so that
no dining guests? But it does have it's touch stuff. It's touch surface controls.
It can go down.
So to wipe off
the
table, you can wipe it off just like a regular table. You know, a wet rag will do it. Of course, what you really need though is you use your like Roomba floor cleaner thing so that you don't have to actually touch the table to wipe it off, and you have the little robot that drives around. Plus you can watch and take bets for when it falls off the edge. You know. But no, this one's kind of think about the kitchen table. Nobody's come up with a big innovation on that, you know, other than what? Oh, change the height of it or change the shape is about it.
A lazy Susan, come on. That's a really great piece of table
tech. Yeah, that pass the syrup at every pancake house technology where this one, I mean, you can imagine like you could see like in a restaurant, it'd be kind of cool when they can cook the food right there in front of you. Seems kind of interesting.
Your own personal hibachi grill.
Woo. You know, and it also just sort of raised my hope. I mean, you see the thin tabletop like that. I mean, it could be sort of the ultimate desk. Imagine if your desk has cooling spots on it to keep your drink or to keep your coffee hot or to keep your drinks cold while you're working. Could be kind of, it's awesome, but I also think usually something that looks this cool and has that much technology in it means the pricing is
ridiculous.
Yes. I have a feeling this is like Italian design and costs like you got it there, but it's called Smart Slab, And oh, and it's a Swedish-German studio. Those Swedes and Germans are coming up with everything nowadays. And then finally, the like grossest thing I've ever seen for a tech thing, but it could be useful to people. Instead of using bariatric surgery, the FDA has approved a device, the Aspire Assist, it's called, that uses a tube inserted into the stomach and a small external system to pump the food out of a patient's stomach after they eat. So it's like, it says, it's like assisted bulimia, you know, so instead of having to go and force themselves to get rid of some part of their meal, you can use technology to do it. They're not going to give it to people with eating disorders. But the idea is, of course, you eat and your stomach says, oh, I'm so full, I couldn't eat another bite. And then the machine sifts out a third of what you ate. And so you just cut the amount of calories that you take in by between 35 and, or yeah, no, I'm sorry. You cut the amount of calories by about 50%. When they've tested this, apparently, including regular meetings with counselors about healthy choices, people were able to lose about 12% of their body weight after a year, which is more than just people dieting regularly. So there is that. But now imagine you could just, if you're just so full, you just like flip the switch and turn the thing on high and you can kind of Roman orgy it for I guess, short periods of time.
Excuse me, folks. I need to go and dump my stomach contents out into the restroom. I'll be right back.
Where does he put it all? Does he have a hollow leg? It's like, no, it's this bag right here. So, yeah, I don't think that one's on the try list. Unless we all become morbidly obese in the idiotic future.
This is like a surgical implanted thing, right? This isn't like, you know.
Yeah, it's got a tube. The tube doesn't go down your throat. I'm looking at the picture.
Can you install it via Yum?
It's like surgically installed between your ribs and into your stomach. So,
Yum. That's appropriate.
It's a serious, it's not cheap either. So those of you who want to rush out, you know, you may want to just consider the old fashioned bulimia way to, do your weight stuff KPFT and Technology Bites do not using eating disorders for weight loss.
Speaking of Yum, Barrett, I was going to bring this up, and now we're out of time, so I can't really. I got to talk with Mark Shuttleworth on Monday about package managers.
Oh, was he here, or where was he?
He's in the Isle of Man. It was a Skype. Oh. It was a Skype interview.
Oh, awesome.
Technology!
But I got to talk to him about the Ubuntu's, what is it, their SnapD thing, their package manager replacement.
Yeah, they're trying to package the packages, more or less. So it's a whole, it's radically different from anything else. For a long time, it was like Yum, you know, yet another package manager, Yast, or Yung. All the same play on everything else. You've got like maybe three main ones, but this one's kind of, it's going to turn things upside down. And the weird thing is there's such a large installed base for that distro. Yes. It's going to make a difference because so many people just kind of do stuff without thinking about it.
Hold this thought and we'll come back to it next week maybe if we want to talk about it.
Technology? What?
Technology!
We can install that package next week.
That's right. We can apt-get.
So I may be in next week. We'll see. I have the potential of having a meeting in town. So
dependency resolution.
All right. Well, you know, try not to destroy the radio show while I'm gone.
Promises.
That was some nice radio show you had once, Jay.
Promise nothing.
Yeah. I remember one time there was a show I was doing. I was doing some show on KPFT way back when, and I had somebody fill in, and when I came back, I didn't have a show anymore. So, you know.
Setting the bar high here.
We will try not to burn down the studio.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites this week. We are glad you could be here. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Link.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Flicked, where are you?
KPFT is looking for a few good board members, and we've got some meet and greet opportunities to help you along with questions and to help you get the petition signatures necessary to qualify as a candidate. We've got a couple of opportunities for you at Discovery Green on Thursday, the 16th and 23rd of this month. So just come before the musical show at 7, and our local election supervisor, Alma, will be at the KPFT booth, or you can catch up with her at intermission during the show to find out how you can get to be a candidate or get your petition as a candidate signed by KPFT members. That's on Thursdays at Discovery Green in the month of June. This is KPFT Houston.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.